holding the last words of Nunvog Amadeus. We talked about the question, is it possible for a woman to have a ksuba of less than the prescribed amounts, 200 a hornet, 200 for a basula, 100 for a non-basula? We said, according to the mayor, no. If it goes anything below that, then it's be'ilas znus. Yeah, by the way, within that, I'm a chulik, as we're showing him, does that mean that no t'nai is effective and the ksuba is always 100 or 200, or that's how the Rambam learns, or the Ram and various other Rishonim learn that, no, there can actually be scenarios where the T'nai is effective, and in fact, she won't get her ksuba, or she'll get less. However, it is Be'ilas is nus to do that, and the Chachamim are opposed to it. But if that happened, then it's true she wouldn't be getting her ksuba. Anyway, that's according to the mayor. Then we said according to Rabbi Yossi is the opposite extreme. He allows any kind of mechila, even verbally. And Rabbi Yehuda is in between. He says you can't be mechila verbally, but she can write out something that says that I consider as though I received half of it. We talked about yesterday where Rabbi Yirmiya says that would have to be written into the ksuba itself. And Abaya says that no, it could be a separate shogel, a separate receipt. Anyway, so in this connection, the Gemara tells a story. Achose de Rami Bachoma habas nesivah l'Rav Ivya. Rami Bachoma's sister was married to Rav Ivya. On the side of it, here it mentions that instead of Rami Bachoma, maybe it's supposed to be Rami Bachoma. Anyway, Irkas Ksubasa. She lost her ksuba, so she lost the shtar where the ksuba was written. Also, so they came to Rabbi Yosef to ask what to do. Amalahu, so he answered. In other words, is the halacha like Rabbi Meir or not? Would we say, if we say the halacha is like Rabbi Meir, then you have to have a ksuba written at all times, because otherwise she doesn't have the smichus das, she doesn't have the mental firmness to the, she doesn't know firmly that she's going to get her ksuba. So the same way over here, then Rabbi Meir would say the same thing. Or would we say, like Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yossi, that it's not so bad because the ksuba can be overwritten? Amalahu, so Rabbi Yosef answers them, Hachi Amar Rabbi Yehuda Amar Shmuel. This is what Rabbi Yehuda said in the name of Shmuel. Zu divrei Rabbi Meir. This, that we're saying that there has to be a ksuba, and that it has to be a minimum of 100 or 200, and if you go without that, then it's no good, is only according to Rabbi Meir. Abba Chachamim Omim, but the other Chachamim disagree with him. They say they're not worried about this Be'ilas Znus problem, that automatically, because she doesn't know for sure that she's ever going to collect the ksuba, therefore we should consider it Be'ilas Znus. The Chachamim say, Masha Adamas Ishtoi, Shtayim L'Sholosh Shanim B'Lo Ksuba. A man can keep his wife around for even 2 or 3 years without a ksuba. So you lost your ksuba, doesn't matter, says Rabbi Yosef. Omalei Abaya, but Abaya says to Rabbi Yosef, isn't this a different case? V'ha Omer Rav Nachman Omer Shmuel, Halacha K'Rav Meir B'Gzeir Yosef. Didn't Rabbi Nachman say in the name of Shmuel that the halacha is like Rabbi Meir when it comes to his gzeiros? Now Rashi explains the gzeirosav means things in which he's more machmir beyond what the Torah itself says. So the Torah itself may be saying that you don't need a ksuba at all, or if you do, then it's okay if it's forfeited or whatever. But Rabbi Meir would be going beyond that and saying that no, if there's no ksuba or the ksuba is less than the prescribed amounts, then it's be'ilas znus, and the halacha would be like him in that. A few of the Rishonim are bothered by the point that how do we call that gzeirosav? Usually a gzeira is when there's something daraisa which would have been allowed, and the chachamim make a gzeira in order to reinforce it. Here it's not really a gzeira. Here it's more of a takana. A gzeira would be something to prevent you from doing something aser. And so they explain that here also you could have scenarios, like we talked about yesterday, where they make a t'nai, and t'nai would in fact be effective and would cause that her ksuba would be less than 200 or less than 100. But Rav Meir doesn't want that. So therefore he makes a gzeira that even for those cases where the t'nai is in effect, then nevertheless you can't override the ksuba, and if you do, then it's be'ilas znus. Well then, it comes out the halacha is like Rav Meir in this. So Rabbi Yosef says, okay, hachi zil ksuba. So Rabbi Yosef says to Rabbi Yivya, okay, in that case, go write her out another ksuba because you can't be without her without a ksuba. And that's the halacha. Now Rashi mentions, by the way, we learned earlier that We learned in the previous parak, there can be cases where there's no written ksuba. However, that is in a place where they never write ksuba at all. There were places in the times of the Gemara where they didn't write out ksuba document at all. They just relied on the takonas chachamim that we know there has to be 200 for a basula or 100 for a non-basula. So in those cases, if you don't have an actual physical ksuba document, doesn't matter because she has the smichus das, she knows she's going to be able to prove in Beis Din that she was married or that she was married as a basula, as the case may be, and therefore that she'll be able to collect. But in places where a ksuba is written and she relies on that written document to show that she's entitled to collect, then there has to be a written document, and if not, then they can't stay together until that's written. And in fact, you have that. The halacha calls that a ksuba de irkasa. We said the first word on the omer over here was irkas, meaning that her ksuba was lost. So in keeping with that, we have such a thing called a ksuba de irkasa, a ksuba that was lost, where yet they write a new ksuba, and they write in the nusach of the ksuba that this is replacing an earlier ksuba that was lost. Okay, so that's how it is. Now, so we said, let's focus on the machloikas of Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Yehuda. So Rabbi Yossi was saying that she could even be moichel the ksuba verbally, and Rabbi Yehuda says that she can be moichel it only if it's in writing. So the Gemara says, ki osir Rabbi Dimi Omar, when Rabbi Dimi came from Eretz Yisrael, he reported that, he said, Omar Rabbi Shimon ben Pazi, Omar Rabbi Shor ben Levi, Meshum bar Kapara, Machloikas betchila. The machloikas between Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Yehuda is only at the beginning. And we're going to explain in a second what beginning of what. Aval b'soif, but when it comes to the end, l'divrei hakol, eina meichelas, then everybody would agree that she can't be meichel, and that she can't be meichel in verbally, and it would have to be in writing. So that's the corner of the Shulman Levi. Rabbi Yechanan Omer ben bezu ben bezu machlokes. Rabbi Yechanan says either way, whether b'tchila or whether b'soif, as we're going to define them in a second, there's still the same machlokes of Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yossi. Now, what is b'tchila and what is b'soif? Omer Rababohu v'didimi farshali mined Rabbi Yechanan. So Rababohu says Rabbi Yechanan personally explained to me da'anov Rabbi Shulman Levi like pogginin ahadadi. You should know, says Rabbi Yechanan, that I and Rabbi Shor ben Levi are not really arguing, even though it sounds like we are, because one of us is saying that the machloikas between the Tanoim is only the Tchila, but not the Soif. And Rabbi Yechanan is saying that it's even the Soif. There's no real machloikas. We're just using the words Tchila and Soif to refer to different things. Good morning, Avraham Moshe.
Good morning.
We're holding on. We're in the middle over here, around in Zion Amud Aleph, the third line of the wide lines. So just to recap what we just said in the last couple of seconds, we said Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Yehuda have a machloikas whether the woman can make a verbal tnai to a verbal mechila to override part or all of Ruksuva. Rabbi Yossi says yes. Rabbi Yehuda says no. There has to be a written document. So now, Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi said that the machloikas between those tanoim is only betchila, only at the beginning, which we're going to define now. But if it's at the end, then there's no machloikas. Everybody agrees that in order to override the tsuba. Now remember, according to the Meir, you can't override the tsuba at all. But we're talking according to Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yossi that you could. So b'soif, Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi is saying, then she can't be moichel verbally. She would have to write out a document to that effect. Rabbi Yechanan is saying either way, there's a machloikas. So Amar Rababohu, second line of the wide lines, Amar Rababohu, l'didimi farshali mined Rabbi Yechanan. Rabbi Yechanan personally explained to me, da'anov Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi like pavginin adadi, that I and Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi are not really arguing with one another. We're both saying the same thing. We're both saying that there is a machloikas between Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Yehuda in certain cases, but not others, but we're using the words betchila and besoif to refer to different things. My batchila de ka'omer Rabbi Shor ben Levi. What does Rabbi Shor ben Levi mean when he uses the word batchila and saying that there's a machloikas then? Is tchilas chuppah. Is when you come to the beginning of the chuppah. So in other words, before the chuppah, everybody agrees, Rabbi Shor ben Levi is saying, everybody agrees that before the chuppah has begun, before we go to the chuppah, or even for, um, Before the chuppah, Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yossi both agree that she could make a verbal t'nai to override the ksuba. Because after all, before the chuppah, the ksuba hasn't even really taken effect yet. So he's saying tchilas chuppah. So when he says machloikas b'tchila, that the machloikas is only at the beginning, he means once the chuppah has begun. Umay soif, and what does he mean by the word soif, where he says that then there's no more machloikas, is soif bia. Is the end of Bia, meaning it was the end of the chuppah, which is when we're going to go to Bia. So in short, in other words, Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi is saying that the machloikas, Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yossi, is only during the chuppah itself. Before the chuppah itself, he would say, before the chuppah itself, it sounds like he would be saying that everybody agrees that she could be moichel, verbally, and after the chuppah, or maybe not, actually, maybe we would say that even before the chuppah, and we mean from the beginning of the chuppah, but from the beginning, meaning from the beginning, when they first got in, when they first did the kiddushin, until the end of the chuppah, then there would be this machloikas of whether a mechila of hers verbally will take effect. Rabbi Yossi will say that yes, Rabbi Yehuda will say no. But once you come to soif chuppah, meaning where the chuppah is over and now we're about to do bia, then at that point, even Rabbi Yossi would agree that it's too late to be moichel verbally, and the only way that we can override any part of the ksuba would be with a shtar. So that would be what Rabbi Yehuda ben Levi means. V'chikamina anu ben bezu machloikas. When I, Rabbi Yochanan, I'm saying that the machloikas is either way, what I mean is tchilas chuppah v'soif chuppah. I'm using that in terms of the beginning of the chuppah and the end of the chuppah. Which, after all, the end of the chuppah is the beginning of bia. So, in other words, so Rabbi Bohu is saying, Rabbi Yochanan explained that Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi and I are just using different terminology, but we both agree on the basic facts. Before the chuppah ever started, you would have the machloikas. During the chuppah itself, you still have the machloikas. Rabbi Yossi says, even during the chuppah itself, if she verbally says that I'm willing to forego some of my ksuba, then that works. The pashtus, you would have to have edim for it, but fine. And Rabbi Yehuda says, no, at that point, once the chuppah has begun, then you need a written shtar for her to say that she's foregoing part of her ksuba. Once the chuppah is over, and now we're ready for bia, then everybody would agree, both Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi and Rabbi Yechanan would be saying that both Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yossi would agree that she can't be moichel verbally anymore. Then if we want to override any part of the ksuba, it has to be in writing. So all of that is explaining how Rabbi Dimi reported the machloikas of Rabbi Yehuda ben Levi and Rabbi Yechanan. Now, he also Rovin. Now, when Rovin came from Eretz Yisrael, and we find throughout Shas, we find this kind of thing, that Rabbi Dimi will come first and report something in the name of the Chachamim in Eretz Yisrael, and later on, Rovin will come with a different version of the same thing. So now, when Rovin came, he reported differently. Omer Rav Shimon ben Pazi, Omer Rav Shimon ben Levi Mishum Bar Kapara, Machloikas Livasuk. The Machloikas, the other way around. Rav Dimi had said that the Machloikas between Rav Yossi and Rav Yehuda is only at the beginning, but not at the end. Now, Rovin is saying the Machloikas is at the end, but at the beginning, then everybody would agree that she can be Moichel. And again, we'll say soon what the Batchila means, what the Basayif and Batchila means. But Rabbi Yechanan, Ben Bezu Machloikas. And Rabbi Yechanan is saying that in either case, there's a Machloikas. And again, Rovin reports something that Rabbi Bohu said on that bears on this. That Rabbi Yochanan personally explained to me that I and Rabbi Yehuda ben Levi are not arguing with one another. My Rabbi Soif to Omer Rabbi Yehuda ben Levi. When Rabbi Yehuda ben Levi uses the word Soif, he means Soif Chuppah. He means the end of the Chuppah. So in other words, he's saying that until the end of the Chuppah, until the end of the chuppah, there's no machloikas, or there is a machloikas. Lavasoif at the end. Until the end of the chuppah, until the chuppah is over, then they would agree that she could be moichel. Once we reach the end of the chuppah, umay tchila tchilas bia, and then when it comes tchila, umay tchila tchilas chuppah, and the word tchila means the beginning of the chuppah. So in other words, Rabbi Yehuda ben Levi would be saying that during the chuppah itself was machloikas, whether she can be moichel verbally or whether you need a shtar. Then when you come to the end of the chuppah, then we're saying there's no more machloikas, or sorry, the other way around, rather. We're saying, this is very confusing over here, we're saying, Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi is saying that levasoif, there's machloikas, but batchila, there's no machloikas, batchila would mean at the end of, the batchila would mean the beginning of the chuppah, basoif would be the end of the chuppah, so it would mean, in other words, that when the chuppah is over, then you still have the machloikas, Rabbi Yehuda, and Rabbi Yossi, whether she can be moichel. But during the chuppah itself, from tchilas chuppah until the end of it, then she could be moichel verbally, and everybody would agree to that. That's what Rabbi Shimon Levi is saying in this version. And when I'm saying Rabbi Yochanan that either way there's machloikas, I'm referring to tchilas bia, besayf bia. I'm referring to before bia, which is after the chuppah, and the end of bia. So in other words, according to this version also, Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi and Rabbi Yochanan are saying the same thing, just using different terms for it. Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi is saying that before the chuppah, before the beginning of the chuppah, then she would be able to be moichel. During the chuppah itself, there would be the machloikas. And after the chuppah, once the chuppah is over and we're ready for bia, then there's no more machloikas because then she can't be moichel anymore. Whereas Rabbi Yochanan would be saying the same thing, but in different words, during the chuppah itself, there's a machloikas, and after the chuppah is over, when we're ready for bia, then there's no more machloikas, because certainly not soif bia, certainly not once bia has taken place. So they're both saying this. So it comes out then that in either version, in either Rav Dimi's version, or in Rabin's version, Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi are not arguing. They're just using different terminology to describe the stages when we say that everybody would agree that both Tanoim would agree that she can be moichel versus when would we say that she can't be moichel anymore verbally and you're going to need a written document for it. So far, we have like this. According to the Dimi's version, so let's consider. You have three stages. You have before the chuppah or the beginning of the chuppah. You have at the end of the chuppah, and you have the end of bia. So Rav Dimi is going to say that the two Tanoim are arguing on the first two cases, from the beginning to the end of the chuppah, but after that, after the chuppah is over and we get to bia, then she can't be moichel anymore. And Rabbi Yochanan would be saying the same thing, he's just putting it in different words. Robin would be saying that the machloikas begins, that the machloikas ends earlier, that he would say before the chuppah, or even by the beginning of the chuppah, she could still be moichel verbally. After that, once the chuppah is over, or during the chuppah itself, she could be moichel. After the chuppah is over, then after the chuppah is over and after bia is over, that is when Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yossi would be arguing. So far that's what it is. So we're saying, according to either version, we're saying Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi and Rabbi Yochanan are not disagreeing. You have two different versions, Rabbi Dimi's version and Robin's version, when they say the machloikas of the Tanoim is taking place, and when do they say not. But now, Amar Papa, but Rav Papa says, he loved Amar Ababohu, Lididini, Farshali, Vinayd Rabbi Yochanan, Da'anan, Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, like Paginan. If it weren't for Rabbi Bohu saying that Rabbi Yochanan is saying that I and Rabbi Shimon Levi don't argue, if it weren't for that, says Rav Papa, I wouldn't understand it that way. Hava Amina, I would rather say that Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Shimon Levi are in fact arguing about that there is in fact a substantive argument between them about when do we, when at what point do Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yossi argue like this? We have the, this, like this. We have a point of the version we have so far using Rabbi Abahu's statement. We're saying the machlokas, you have the machlokas tanoim. Then you have the Udi Amiroyim, Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi and Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yochanan are agreeing with each other on when the machlokas, on when the machlokas takes place. But then you have two different versions of Gimmi's version and Rabin's version of what Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi said. Rav Papa said, I would rather understand that you have a machloikas tanoim, you have a machloikas of the Uri Amiroyim, Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi and Rabbi Yechanan, when that machloikas of the tanoim applies, versus when do they agree with each other. And Rav Dimi and Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, and Rav Dimi and Rabin are saying the same thing in different words. Because so Rav Papa says, I would have rather said that Rabbi Yechanan and Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi Pligi are arguing, Rav Dimi for Rabin like Pligi, and Rav Dimi and Rav Dimi and Rabin are not arguing. Because you could understand Rav Dimi and Rabin also, when they use the word soif and tchila, you could say, my soif, shekama Rabin soif chuppah, that Rabin might well be using soif to mean the end of the chuppah, which precedes the beginning of the bia, or my tchila, shekama Rav Dimi, tchila bia. And then when Rav Dimi says tchila, he means the beginning of the bia, so we're talking about the same stage. Rav Papa says, listen, because Rav Abahu said otherwise, then therefore we won't really have a choice but to accept that that is the meaning of the Machlokas, because Rav Abahu was saying that Rav Yechanan personally explained to him. But if it weren't for that, says Rav Papa, it would have been more preferable to say that Rav Yechanan and Rav Yeshua ben Levi are arguing, rather than to say that Rav Dimi and Rabin are arguing. So Gemara says, my kamash malan. Okay, what's Rav Papa's point? The fact is, we have what Rav Abahu said. So there's no way of understanding Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi differently. Why is Rav Papa bothering to tell us what he would have thought? And the answer is Hakamash Malan. Rav Papa is telling us an important thing. It's much more preferable when we have a choice to say that Amiroyim are arguing regarding their own independent svaras. So each Tana has the, each Amora has a svara of their own. Why the halacha should be like such and such. We can say, Eilu ve'eilu, Divrei Elokim Chayim. Both of them are valid svaras according to the Torah. So therefore each of them is true on some level. Both of them came from Hashem. Both of them are just, each one is filtered down through a different person's das. The whole point is that Amnon explains how does machloikas come in the first place is because every person thinks slightly differently than the other. No two people think exactly alike. And therefore, necessarily, when you have things that depend on logic, that depend on how to reassemble the pieces or how to consider which thing outweighs the other, then you're going to have, it's a natural thing that people are going to see it differently. The Torah tells us in this week's Parsha that it's supposed to be that then you go to the Beis Din HaGadol and they decide it one way or the other. Either they have a Kabbalah from their Rabbeim that it's one way or the other, or if they don't, then they vote on it. Once there's no more Sanhedrin, then Machloikas began proliferating. But even so, we still say Eilu Ve'eilu Divrei Elokim Chayim, because each one of them is using the logic, that is using a logical idea, is using a logical Torah-based idea to come up with their conclusion. On the other hand, the Gemara is saying, that is better than saying that two Amiroyim are arguing within the opinion of one Amora, namely to say that, using Rabbi Bahu's statement, we necessarily have to say that Rabin and Rav Dimi are arguing. There's obviously some kind of argument over here, because after all, we have Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi and Rabbi Yochanan, and we have Rav Dimi and Rabin. And if we understand Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi and Rabbi Yochanan to be saying the same thing, then necessarily, since we have Rav Dimi and Rabin reporting that machloikas, reporting those statements in two different ways, it has to mean that there's an argument between them. What did Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi actually say versus what did Rabbi Yochanan actually say? The problem with that is that then it means, so Rav Dimi and Rabin are not trying to tell us their own independent svaras, which then you could say, Eilu Ve'eilu Divrei Elokim Chayim. Each one of them is telling us, Rabbi Yochanan said this, and Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi said that. Well, they can't possibly have said both things. So it comes out, therefore, that one of them, either Rav Dimi or Rabin, has to be mistaken. And Rabin says, you wouldn't even say, Eilu Ve'eilu Divrei Elokim Chayim on that. Because Divrei Elokim Chayim is only when you can say that there are two valid svaras over here and there's room for each one. But over here, it's a factual thing. Did Rabbi Yochanan say this, or did he say that? Did Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi say this, or did he say that? It would come out, we would have to, if we understand it that way, we would have to say that either Rav Dimi, or Rabin is making a mistake and reported it incorrectly. So the Papa says, I don't like that idea at all. I would rather be able to say that Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi and Rabbi Yochanan are disagreeing within the opinions of the Tanoim. Okay, so Tosfos points out, I mean, they're still arguing within the opinions of Tanoim. But what it is, they are using their svara. It's not that they're saying, we heard from our Rebbeim that the Machloikas, Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Yehuda is in this case versus that case. Each of them is coming up with their own independent svara, looking into Rabbi Yossi's opinion, looking into Rabbi Yehuda's opinion, when would each one of them hold his opinion versus when would he concede to the other one. So that's fine. We can stay on that Eilev Eilev Divrei Elokim Chayim because there is room in Torah for both svaras. Ultimately, of course, we have to pass in practical halacha, like one or like the other, but there is room in the theory of Torah for both of them. Both of them are valid svaras. As opposed to, with Rav Dimi and Rabin, we would have to say, Rav Dimi is not saying, I think it should be like this, and Rabin is saying, I think it should be like this. Rav Dimi is supposed to be reporting what Rabbi Shurban Levi and Rabbi Yochanan said. Rabin, same thing. So then it would come out that one of them is reporting mistakenly, and Rav Papa says we would rather not have that. So look, he says, because we have Rav Abahu's clarification from Rabbi Yochanan, who heard from Rabbi Yochanan himself, therefore we have no choice but to say that that's how it is. Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi are not actually arguing, and therefore if we find the difference over here, it must be that either Rav Dimi or Rabin reported wrongly what they heard. But if it weren't for that, says Rabbi Papa, I would have rather said that Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi and Rabbi Yochanan are arguing on Svaris rather than to say that Rav Dimi or Rabin is mistaken. So this is an important point, by the way, that, I mean, we don't really have it mentioned explicitly in other places in Shas, but the idea behind it is discussed here and there by Achronim in particular, that in general we should try to find that a machloikas is more on matters of svara rather than on matters of fact. You have the expression that says that there can't be a machloikas in metzius. There can't or there shouldn't be a machloikas about actual facts, because if you're going to say actual facts, then on the face of it, one or the other of them has to be mistaken, as opposed to if you say it's machloikas of how to interpret the fact or how to interpret the facts that happened or the knowledge of Torah that we have or whatever, then that's a valid thing and we can say on that Eilev Eilev Divrei Elokim Chayim. The Mishnah says, Noisim l'b'sula shneim osa chodesh v'shatov ha'abal, from when a b'sula has been proposed to for her husband by her husband. So in other words, we have I shouldn't really say propose. What we have is there was kiddushin. Then from the kiddushin, at some point they start planning the wedding. So now, when the husband, Tava, when he tells her that, he's telling her, you know, we want to set a date for the wedding. We're going to set a date for the wedding. So we allow her 12 months, Lefaunus Asatma, to provide for herself. She needs to make sure she has enough jewelry and cosmetics and whatever else. So therefore, in other words, so there was Kiddushin. Now, sometime after the Kiddushin, the Chosin comes and says, you know, we got to start planning this wedding. So then he has to give her a minimum of 12 months for that. And the same way as 12 months are granted for the woman, the same way 12 months are granted for the man, because he also has to prepare. He has to prepare a suda, he has to prepare a chuppah, so therefore he also needs preparations, and therefore he's also allotted 12 months for that purpose. For a widow or any woman who's previously been married, she doesn't have to worry so much about tachshitim because she already has them from before. So therefore, shloshim yom, therefore she gets only 30 days. There's a machlokas we're showing him within that. What happens if the husband has never been married before and the wife has, or vice versa? Which one do we go by? Do we say that we're entitled to 12 months because one or the other of them is because one or the other of them has never been married? Or do we say that no, if she's already been married before, then the husband can put together a wedding in 30 days, and therefore we should grant him only 30 days, even though he himself has never been married before? Anyway, continues the Mishnah. He gives man, what if that time comes? So the deadline comes, the 12 months have passed, the loy nisu, they have not yet gotten married, there was some kind of delay. Now, at the very beginning of the Masechta, we talked about the question, what would happen, for example, there could be various reasons the wedding would be delayed. First of all, the reasons could be based on him or based on her. It could be that he's delaying or it could be that she's delaying. In addition, you can also have that neither one is delaying deliberately. But for example, one of them is sick. Or for example, she became Nida, and as we talked about yesterday, we should try to avoid Chovas Nida. So is our Mishnah talking about that? So we actually discussed at the beginning of the Masechta the possibility we brought. Rabbi Choy had said, since the word is Nisu, which means they were not married, which refers to the woman, then therefore that would be that even if that even for example, if she's sick, then nevertheless the rule of the continuation of this Mishnah applies, that the husband has to start supporting her, because otherwise it would have said like Nasu, which a Nasu is the active form, which would mean the husband has not married her. But since it says Nisu, she was not married, which is the passive, which refers to her, then therefore it would mean, so now, it wouldn't mean if she says, I'm delaying the wedding because I've got cold feet. There's no reason then that because I don't want to go, I'm not sure if I want to go through with it. There's no reason we would require the husband to support her at that point. But if the delay is because she became sick, then Rabbi Choy was arguing that maybe, in fact, she is entitled to Mizonis at this point. On the other hand, Rabbi Ashi said over there, this is, again, back at the very beginning of the Masechta, the days on days, that no, the Mishnah is using the word Nisu only because previously the Mishnah was talking about the woman. So therefore, now we continue talking in terms of the woman. But in fact, Rabbi Ashi says that no, if there was any kind of delay, if there was any kind of unavoidable delay, then maybe not necessarily would we say that she's entitled to Mizonis yet. Because the fact is, the wedding hasn't taken place. What we mean is, v'lo nisu, we would mean the husband is getting cold feet and he wants to delay the marriage further. So then, either way, the Mishnah is saying, once that happens, then the woman is entitled to eat from her husband's possessions. In other words, at that point, he has to start supporting her and the various other things as well. He has to start providing clothing and the other things. And we show him add also that then he becomes entitled to the various things that he gets from her, such as Maisia Deha and her Mitzia and so forth. So that's in other words. So again, we have the 12 months. Comes the end of the 12 months. He still hasn't married her yet. Therefore, he's still already required to start supporting her, and he's entitled to her Maisia Deha, and so forth. But Oichos Betruma, and also if her chosin is a Koyan and she's a Yisraelis, then already she's allowed to be eating Truma. In fact, according to the original din, as we're gonna say in the Gemara over here, Minatoda she would have been able to eat even when she was in Arusa. So Midrabanan, we're gonna say that not. But now that the 12 months have passed, now she can go ahead and start eating truma. Now, when we're saying that her chosin, the kohen, can give her truma, so not just during this time, but in general, throughout their marriage, how much truma versus how much chulin does he have to give her? Now, on the one hand, the kohen would rather give her truma. After all, he gets it for free. On the other hand, she might not necessarily want truma, because after all, there are going to be times when she can't eat at b'chlal, there's going to be times when she's tameh, and she can't eat truma. Even when she's taher, it's a bit of a bother to make sure that truma remains taher, and that it doesn't accidentally become tameh, because then you can't eat it. So what's the deal? When we're saying that if she's marrying a kohen, then he can give her truma, then she can eat truma, how much is he entitled to say, of the food I'm giving you, it's going to be truma? So the tafinem in noisim la'akol truma. Rav Tarfon says he can give it to her all truma if he wants. She can't eat truma during the time she's tameh. Fine, she can sell the truma at that point, and she can buy regular chulin food with it and eat that while she's tameh. The Ritzvah adds, in that case, then according to Rav Tarfon, it would mean he'd have to give her more truma than he would have had to give an equivalent amount of chulin, because after all, truma sells for less than chulin does for exactly that reason, because it's very easy for it to become tameh, and then it becomes worthless, or almost worthless, because then you can only burn it for firewood, so therefore, truma tends to sell for less than chulin, so therefore it would mean that he'd have to give her more truma to compensate for that. Still, the fact that he gets truma for free, and the fact that he has a lot of it, might make that worthwhile to him. Rabbi Akiva, I'm a mechza chulin or mechza truma. Rabbi Akiva says no. Maximum he can give her is half chulin and half truma. The chulin she can save for when she's tameh. The truma we can eat when she's taher. But like this, you don't have to burden her with the bother of always of having to sell it, or with the bother of always having to make sure that her food remains taher. Because the chulin she can allow to become tameh, and there's no problem. Okay. since we're talking about when a woman who's not yet married is able to eat truma because she's going to be marrying a kohen. So the Mishnah continues, Hayavam ain't a makel the truma. If she's a shemeras yavam, as though she was married to a kohen, and now his brother, who was also a kohen, is going to be marrying her, is going to be doing yibum with her. She cannot yet eat truma during that time that she's shemeras yavam, as we're going to learn in the Gemara. We learned about it already, actually, in Yavamas. What about us, the shisha hadashim b'fnei baal? What if we said she has 12 months to prepare her jewelry and cosmetics and what have you? So suppose that 6 months passed after that tshava baal, after the husband said, let's set a date for the wedding. So if 6 months passed with the husband, and then the husband died, with shisha hadashim b'fnei yavam, and then the next 6 months passed where she's a shemeras yavam, and at the end of that, the yavam is going to be marrying her. Or even if all the 12 months minus one day was with the Yavam. So in other words, so there was the Tava Baal, 11 months and 29 days passed, then her Chosin died, now her Yavam is going to be doing Yavam with her. So she's almost ready, but not quite. Or vice versa, that right after Tava Baal, then he died. Now the Yavam is going to do Yivam with her, but he's waiting the 12 months because she's still busy getting together the things for the wedding. So the other way around, but he Tava Baal, the first day after that, the husband died. Now you have the rest of the 11 months and 29 days is taking place while she's a Shemeres Yavam. With all of those, Eina Echelos Petruma, in all those cases, she cannot yet eat Truma, because we're saying the fact is that as a Shemeres Yavam, she can't eat Truma just by virtue of the fact, even though that her Yavam is a Kohen, that's not reason enough for her to eat Truma yet. As we'll learn in the Gemara tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem. And therefore, she can't yet eat truma as a shemeres yavam. So even if most of the time was a shemeres yavam, or half of it was at a shemeres yavam or whatever, still she can't eat truma. There was the fact, of course, she could eat truma according to the original din. She could have since we're talking within the 12 months, she never had the ability to eat truma because of her husband either. Because again, Minat Torah, she would have been able to, but as the Gemara is going to say soon, Midrabanan, she's not allowed to during the time of the Erusin, during the 12 months. So therefore, she never had a chance to eat truma with her husband. And now, even when the 12 months are over, then she can't with the Yavam until she actually marries him. Unlike with the husband, where once the 12 months are over, as we said, she would have been able to eat truma. So the Gemara says, the Mishnah says, Zum Mishnah Rishon. All of this that we said, that once the 12 months are over, she can start eating truma by virtue of the fact that she is mekudeshes to a kohen and that the chuppah is soon going to take place, that was the original Mishnah. But based in Shalach Harein Amru, but a later based in said, Ein ha'isha echelos b'truma ad shetikanes l'chuppah, she cannot eat truma until she actually goes into the chuppah for reasons that we're going to discuss in the Gemara. Okay, so the Gemara starts off, Menohani Mil. Where do we know this from? This that we're saying that she gets 12 months. Why after 12 months? Now, when it's a tchana of the chachamim, but still the question is, what posik are the chachamim basing themselves on? What are they using as an asmachta? Amar chista da amar kura. You have the posik by Rivka. When Eliezer comes to take Rivka to marry Yitzchak, and you have the next morning, by Yomer Achia V'ima, her brother and her mother said, we have the famous thing that Basua had died overnight because it was poison. Anyway, so her mother, her brother Lavan, and her mother say, Teishra Nari Itonu Yomim Oser. Let the girl stay with us for Yomim or Oser. Literally, Yomim means days, and Oser means 10. But what does that mean? My Yomim. What do we mean by days? Do we mean literally 2 days? So they're saying, let her stay by us 2 days or 10 days. It doesn't work. Does a person talk like that? They ask him, let her stay for an extra 2 days. And he says, no. And they say, okay, let her stay for 10 days. Of course not. If he's not willing to wait for 2 days, he's certainly not going to be willing to wait for 10 days. So obviously the word yomim must mean a year. As you find, the different pasuk that uses the word yomim for the amount of time that you have to buy back a house in Bati or Rechon, where you have 12 months, you have a year. So therefore we see from that yomim means a year, and therefore with Rivka, therefore, with Rivka, when she's when Lavan and their mother are saying let her stay for yomim ayaser, it means let her stay for a year to prepare her tachshitim, and if you don't want a year, then at least let her stay for 10 months. So that's where we get the 12 months from. So an interesting point, Rav Levi Yitzchak, the Rebbe's father, makes an interesting point in his notes on Psukim that are in Makot Levi Yitzchak. So the fact is that she didn't end up having the 12 months. First of all, I mean, he has a bunch of questions. Among them is, so what happens when they say, let her stay for Yomim my Osir, then Eliezer tells them, don't delay me, Hashem Itzliach Dati. Hashem has made my way successful, so let me go. And so they say, okay, fine, you know, let's call in Rivka, ask her if she even wants to go through with this marriage. And she says yes, and therefore they send her off. They let her go. But so she didn't have 12 months after all to prepare her jewelry and cosmetics. And why is it when Eliezer tells them that Hashem made my way successful, then right away they say, okay, then we have to let her go. Why don't they still stick to the fact is, okay, very nice, Hashem made your way successful. And the fact is she still needs the cosmetics and the jewelry and we need time to prepare it. So the Blavik has a long, long explanation about it. The gist of it for our purposes is that when Eliezer says Hashem Itzliach Dauki, what he really means is that he's accomplished already Beruchnius. He can see already that he's accomplished Beruchnius what needs to be done in terms of her cosmetics and her jewelry. So therefore, we don't need time by you anymore. All of that can be arranged. All of that can be arranged when I get back home, when I bring her to Yitzchak, and then all of that will be arranged there. And so then they have little choice but to agree. So then at that point, they also can understand how these things work for Ruchnius. So they're, at least to some extent. So therefore, at that point, then they say, okay, we only need to find out whether Rivka herself is willing to go along with that. And as soon as she is, then they send her off. Then Reb Levick explains something else as well. At the end of the story, the last pasuk over there of that perek, it says that Yitzchak brought Rivka to the tent of his mother Sarah, Vayikach as Rivka, and then he married Rivka, and she became his wife. Now, why out of order like that? Why is he first bringing her to Sarah's tent, and only then is he marrying her? You bring her to the tent is a later stage of marriage. So the Levi Yitzchak explains that what it means is he brought her into Sarah's tent in order to give her the jewelry and whatnot that Sarah had bequeathed to him. So therefore, now that answers the question. So she was supposed to have 12 months for that. Well, Eliezer had told them earlier, and now Yitzchak was confirming it with action, we don't need 12 months. We have it already ready from Sarah, and all we have to do is bring Rivka into the tent and give it to her. And so therefore, even though we learned from the pasuk that they were asking for 12 months, because that is the usual time, but here that wasn't necessary. It was in fact all pre-prepared already. The ruchniistic jewelry for her, and apparently the gashmiistic jewelry as well. Okay. So the Gemara asks, the Ema Chodesh, you're telling me the word yomim means a month on the basis of means a year on the basis of another pasuk where the word yomim means a year. But maybe it means a month, d'chtiv ad chodesh yomim. After all, we find another pasuk where the word yomim, days, is in connection with a month, ad chodesh yomim, until a month of days. So maybe it means that a besula should get only a month to repair. And the answer is Amri. So the answer, done in yomim stam, the yomim stam. We can derive what it says, the word yomim, without anything else, from another place where it says yomim without anything else. Then done in yomim stam, mi yomim, shenever ben chodesh. With the chodesh yomim, the yomim is modifying the word chodesh, so that's a different kind of yomim, so therefore that's not what it means over here. If it meant over here, something like that, then it would say something else together with the word yomim. Tosis points out the same thing. There's another positive that says yerach yomim, same thing, same idea. In other words, the word yomim is modifying the word yerach, so it means a month. But when you had the word yomim by itself, without anything else, then it means a year. Okay. The Gemara says, Omer of Zeta, Tana, we learn in a Braisa, Ktana, Bein Hio, Bein Oviyo, Yechoyom La'akit. When a Ktana has been Mekudesh, either she or her father can protest and say that the marriage should not take place until she gets older. We learned, by the way, in the previous parak that the father is able to be Mekadesh his daughter and be able to give her to the chuppah, even Baal Korcha, even against her will. But so Rishonim say, based on our Gemara over here, that what it means is when she's a Naira, sure, he has the right to, but not when she's a Ktan. So the Gemara says, Bishlema ihi matzi ma'akra. I can understand why she is able to hold back, why she's able to say, I want to wait until I get older, because after all, Because after all, first of all, she's too young really for Tashmish. Second of all, also, she's going to have to start keeping house. That's a big tircha for her. She's not ready for it yet. So therefore, she's saying, look, I'm only a little girl. Give me a few more years. Let me stay as an arusa during that time. And afterwards, once I'm old enough for bia, and once I'm old enough to keep house, then fine, we can start. Ela aviha, but why should her father have the ability to? Nichala. After all, if she wants to get married, aviha my naftalei mina. Why should the father care? Why should at that point the father have any permission, any possibility of preventing of delaying the marriage? And then Tosfos actually points out that what we're saying is like this. When we're saying that she has the right to, the point is that she's not considered a moredes. Later on in the Masech, later on in the Perek, we're going to talk about the case of a moredes, a woman who rebels against her husband, who goes on strike against him, basically. And one way she can be moredes is something like this, where she's saying, I don't want to get married. We're already niskadish, but she's saying, I don't want to get married. I don't want to start a married life. And she's called a moredes, and we have later on in the Perek what happens as a result of that. Here, where she's a katana, and she's saying that we respect what she's saying. We don't require her to get married or face penalties. So now we're saying, if she wants to get married, then why does her father have a say in it? So it almost sounds like Tosfos says that it almost sounds like then if she wants to get married, but her father doesn't. The fact is, we're saying her father can prevent it, but Tosfos says in that case, so what? We're going to start deducting from her ksuba. We're going to start penalizing her. Why should she suffer because her father wants to delay the marriage? And so Tosfos says, okay, but what the Gemara means is, in other words, if we're going to say that her father has the right to refuse, then fine. No, we're not going to say that she's a moredes. We're going to say then that the husband can divorce her without giving her her ksuba. After all, the ksuba goes to the father. But the question is, why should the father even have that right in the first place? Why does he have an interest in this? And the answer is because he does. Sabar, he can figure like this. Hashkala yada, right now she's a little girl. She doesn't know what she's getting herself into by getting married. Lamacha mimrid of nafta. Soon enough, she's going to discover that married life is not all it's cracked up to be. And therefore, she's going to want out. She's a little girl, after all. She's not ready for it yet. So therefore, she's going to be murdered. She's going to rebel. And she's going to want to leave. She's going to want a divorce, in other words. But ask her, enough, lay la voy, and then she's going to come and fall on me. In other words, I'm going to be responsible for her again. So therefore, the father may say that, in fact, I don't want her to get married yet. Let her stay mekudeshes. Let her stay mekudeshes for the time being until she's old enough that she'll understand better what she's getting herself into. And that way, there's less likelihood that she's going to end up back with me. So therefore, that's why the father has the resource to delay the marriage when she's a katana. Okay. More on this topic. The Gemara says, Omer of Abba Bar Levi, Ein poskenak katana la'asiyach shikatana. You're not supposed to decide about a girl when she's a katana that she's going to get married when she's a katana. Because again, then you're putting her through this kind of tircha of married life, which is not something that a katana is really ready for yet. Abba poskenak katana la'asiyach shigola. But you can make a deal. You can make a deal about a katana that you're finding her a chosen, and she's going to get married when she's older. Now Rashi explains this is talking about without kiddushin, because kiddushin we have actually a gemara in Masechet Kiddushin that says you're not supposed to be in the kaddish, even though a father is allowed to accept kiddushin on behalf of his daughter, a tana or a naira, he's not supposed to until she gets older and says that I would like to marry plainly. So we're talking about over here without kiddushin. An example of that we have is, for example, the tznoi in between the Rebbe Rashab and his eventual wife, Rebbe Tzinshen and Sarah, were made when they were respectively 4 and 5 years old. So that's when they're both katanim, but there was no kiddushin yet. There was just a tznoi, and there was an agreement that eventually they're going to get married, which eventually they did about 11 years later. So that's how you can do it. So the Gemara says, Pshita, isn't that obvious? Why should there be a problem making such a deal, making tznoyim like that when the girl was little? And the answer is, Ma'u detema, without Rav Abba Bar Levi telling us, you would have thought, Leichush, we should have to be concerned, Duma Ma'ayla Pachta Mehashta, after all, if she knows now, as a little girl, that she's already promised in marriage to somebody, that may make her very nervous. Again, she's going to be thinking ahead to married life and the tircha and the difficulties of it sometime, and that's going to make her weak, and then that's going to make her weak or sick with thinking ahead what's going to be. Therefore, you shouldn't do that. Kamar Shmuel, and therefore, if Alav Alevi is telling us that's not a problem, you can do that. We're not worried about that it's going to have such a bad psychological effect. There were, by the way, places here and there in Jewish history, there were places where they actually married, in particular in Yemen, they actually sometimes married off children as children. There was a special reason for it. This was when the children were orphans. The law of the country at that time was that any orphan is considered a ward of the state and is going to be taken away and raised by the state. And of course, the state being Muslim, then they'd be raised as that as well. So therefore, but they wouldn't do that if the orphan was married. So therefore, they had no choice. They would have to marry off kids, even as babies, in order to avoid that kind of thing. But ordinarily, we have what the Gemara is saying over here, that you're not supposed to do that. Okay. The Gemara continues. What if, now this is all we're talking about, that we're talking about that the girl is not married, where she's still a naiva. But if she became a begeris, even one day, the niskadsha, and then she was the kurdish, then we give her only 30 days to prepare her wedding, to prepare her the things she needs for her wedding, because Rav Huna's svara is that since she's already a begeris, in those times, girls were usually married as a naiva. By the time she's a begeris, then she's kind of an old maid. So therefore, so we can expect that during the time that she was in Naira, she's already been preparing the jewelry and cosmetics and other needs that eventually she's going to need for as a married woman. And therefore, now that she's a begeris, we can assume she already has that largely done, and therefore she needs only 30 days. Kalmana, just like an almana of our Mishnah. So the Gemara says, Macy, I have a contradiction. A Brisa says, Bogra, that if she becomes a begeris, which, by the way, Tosfos points out. So when do you have the 12 months of our Mishnah? I mean, after all, if we said you're not supposed to be Mekadosh her as a Katana, and Nairus lasts only 6 months. So what's the scenario? So Tosfos says that if she was Niskadosh while she was a Naira, sure, she has the full 12 months. What we're talking about over here is that she became a Begeris, and only then was she Niskadosh. So then, like Rashi had said, we can assume that she already started preparing things in advance, because she's already practically an old maid, and therefore she's already preparing everything in advance. But if she was Niskadish while she was a Naira, then the fact is that she has 12 months, because then she's not in such a rush. She knows that she's going to get, usually Erisin are going to lead to Nisuin, and that'll happen after she's a Begeris, so she doesn't feel like she's rushed, like she has to have things ready right away, and therefore she has 12 months. So the Gemara says, Mesli, so Bogra Harei Ketua. A Braisa says, when she becomes a Begeris, it's like she had been told, let's start preparing the wedding. So my love Ketua to Besula. Don't we mean like Ketua when she's a Besula, meaning our Mishnah says she has 12 months? And the answer is like, not necessarily. You could say maybe the Braisa means Ketua Dalmana. It means that she's a Ketua, like an Almana, where therefore the 30-day clock starts. So no proof against Rav Huna. Okay, the Gemara says, Toshma, Begeris Shashasa Shnemas Chodesh. A Braisa says that if a Begeris waited 12 months, Rabbi Eliezer Omer, Hoyo B'chayev Baila Mizeneseha, Rabbi Eliezer says, since at that point the husband is already chayev to support her, like we said in the Mishnah, Yofer, then he's already able to cancel her Nadarim by himself. Now, during the Erusin, the halacha is only the father and the chosin together can cancel her, can veto her Nadarim and cancel them, do a hardest Nadarim for her, but only after they get married is it the husband's exclusive privilege. But Rabbi Eliezer is saying that once the 12 months have passed, then for most purposes, even though the chuppah hasn't yet taken place, for most purposes we consider them married, including that he can be made for her nedarim. So we see, in other words, that we're saying a begeris who waited 12 months, implying that even a begeris gets 12 months. And the answer is Ema, no, fine, but the braisa may mean begeris v'shashasa shnemas chodesh. It means either one. If she's a begeris, or if 12 months have passed since her husband told her, let's start preparing the wedding, then Rabbi Eliezer, I'm a hurla by lechad the mizonis, say a yofer. Then Rabbi Eliezer says, once her husband is chayv in the mizonis, then he can be made for as well. So no proof, though, that a begeris gets 12 months, because maybe it means there's two separate cases, where she became a begeris, or, and where there, according to Rav Huna, she gets only 30 days to prepare, or where the 12 months have passed when she was miskadish as a naira, as is the usual case. Okay, Toshma, Hama'aris is a Besula. Another Braisa says, when a man is Mekadosh of Besula, Bein Shetova Baal V'Hima Akneves, so now, later on, whether the husband tells her, let's fix a date for the wedding, and she's holding back, or Uvein Shetova Hiu Bal Ma'akiv, or whether she's saying let's fix a date and the husband is holding back. Either way, Nosan Lashnemas Achodesh Mishas Tviya. We allow her 12 months from the time of the Tviya. Avaloi Mishas Erusin. But not from the time of the Avosin. We don't say the 12 months go back from the time of the Avosin. We start from the date of the Tviya, which of course is going to be, which the Pashtus would usually be later on. And the Braisa continues, Ubogra Harei Ketvua. Now, when she becomes a Begeres, then it's the equivalent of as if she had been Tvua, as if the husband had told her, let's start fixing a date for the wedding. Ketzad, what do we mean? Bogra Yemecha v'niskatcha, if she became a begeres for even one day, v'niskatcha, and only after that was she niskadish, still noisim l'shnei masachodesh. She still gets 12 months. V'la arusa shloishim yoyim, but there can be a case where an arusa gets only 30 days, which the Gemara is going to say in a second what that means. So therefore we see clearly that even though she's a begeres, because only then was she in Spanish, she gets 12 months to repair, not 30 days like Ravuna. Tiyuvta de Ravuna. So that's a clear contradiction against Ravuna. Gemara says Tiyuvta. You're right. So Ravuna has been refuted. A Basula always gets 12 months. A Basula, even if she's a Begeris, she always gets 12 months to repair. Now, my Vla Arusa Shloshin, what that last line mean that an Arusa gets 30 days? Amara Papa, Hachi Kama. What it means is, Begeris, Shavrol, Ashnemas, Achodish, Babagris. It means that 12 months since she became a Begeris, Beniskadsha, and then she's Niskadish. So in other words, again, we said usually it would be during the Nairus, or like this we were talking about before, where she becomes, where he's Makadish, or right after she becomes a Begeris. Now we're talking about she had already been a Begeris for a year. She's really an old maid. And now, finally, someone is Makadisher, then then at that point, she gets only 30 days like an Almana, because at that point, again, we can assume that she already took the time to prepare everything in advance, because she doesn't want, because she knows already that she's a bit overage, and as it is, there's probably going to be fewer people who want to marry her, so therefore, she's going to figure in advance, let me prepare as much as possible. That way, if I do find a chassan, we don't have to delay for very long. Everything is just about ready, and we just need the final touches. So that's pretty much the bottom line. So if she's a basula, what we're saying is, if she's a naira, or if she just became a begeres, then she gets 12 months. If she's already been a begeris for a long time, then she gets only 30 days. Within that, there's machlokas from Shonim. Does that mean she always gets only 30 days? Does it mean that, for example, let's say she became a begeris 6 months ago? Does it mean that she gets an additional 6 months? Or does it mean that at that point she just gets the 30 days? But that's the basic idea. Okay. I should try out.